Hello, Legion of Audience. This is James, and before we get started today, I wanted to take a second and let you all know about the brand new Who Would Win Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get behind-the-scenes access like you've never seen before, go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Who Would Win patrons will have access to outtake videos, early info on battles, and even get a vote on characters that we'll use in upcoming episodes. So if you'd like to support me and the show, head to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow, and for as little as $5 a month, you can define yourself as more than just a fan. You'll be an official member of the Legion. Hope to see you there.
A hulking figure sits in his living room listening to the radio. The hum of the AM dial fully present underneath the local country music station that barely comes through. The figure leans back as we see Leatherface taking in a moment of relaxation. But it is then that the radio noise turns to static and keeps getting louder and louder. Leatherface stands up abruptly, just in time to see Pyramid Head materialize in the room with him. Knowing full well this hulking figure is not a friend, Leatherface grabs his chainsaw and gets to revving. It's Texas versus Silent Hill. It's Bubba versus Triangle Head. It's Leatherface versus Pyramid Head. Today on Who Would Win?
And welcome to another episode of Who Would Win, a show that completely ignores anything important happening in the world and instead focuses on a fictional battle between two characters from the worlds of comics, sci-fi, and fantasy. I'm your host, James Gavsey, and as always, I'm joined by the one and only Ray Stikanis. Legion of Audience, our faithful fan base, Shocktober continues with yet another matchup between two badasses of horror. In one corner, you have Leatherface, the terrifying antagonist of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre series, a brutal and disturbed killer who wears a mask made of human skin and wields a chainsaw. And in the other corner, you have Pyramid Head, a silent, enigmatic figure from the Silent Hill franchise, characterized by his large, triangular helmet and massive blade, symbolizing guilt and punishment. As usual, I did the patented Who Would Win Google test just to see how many times this matchup has been discussed. And not to my surprise, these two characters have been discussed, I'd say, a few times in a one-on-one battle, but it's never, ever come to any type of decisive conclusion until today, that is. Ray, what are your thoughts on today's matchup?
I, as always, remain excited about the matchups we do in this show. Shocktober is one of my favorite times of year. Look, I like scary movies. I like scary video games. I like scary media in general. So Pyramid Head is somebody that I've been wanting to get on the show for at least 2 or 3 years now. And finally, with the Leatherface has been on the show once before, and he fought Daryl Dixon and did not win that matchup. So this is a redemption for Leatherface, but boy, oh boy, do we have an opponent for him today. The man, the myth, the legend known as Pyramid Head, never spoken one line of dialogue in any of the games to my remembrance, only appeared so much, but carved himself into horror lore forever with his handful of moments. That is special right there.
It is special. Look, today's matchup special. Legion of Audience, our fan base, Ray and I are both tied so far for wins in Shocktober. In case all of you are wondering, yes, we are that freaking competitive. We do want to win today's battle to, you know, kind of get ahead and win the crown of Shocktober champion. And, you know, knowing things could get a little messy today, the Who Would Win production team, in their wisdom, decided to bring in someone who has a track record of keeping both Ray and I in line sometimes. Will they be able to do that again? Let's find out, because making another appearance on the Who Would Win show, oh my gosh, it's the world's tallest voice actor. It's Sonic from Sonic X Shadow Generations. It's Batman from the soon-to-be-released Batman Arkham Shadow game for the MetaQuest 3, of course. Oh yeah, you know who it is. It's Roger Craig Smith. Roger, welcome back to Who Would Win.
I would say it's good to be back. It's nice to be here during Shocktober, but as you just stated, it's so much work dealing with both of you guys and just trying to keep you guys in line. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to say it's good to be back. I'll just say, like, I'm back and here we go yet again. Yeah. And here we go.
Look,
yet again.
Actually, this is quite surprising, Roger. I thought you and I had a connection. I thought everything was good between us. Ray was there as well. And you know how that goes, but no, here you are stating that maybe things are a little amiss with how you feel about the Who Would Win show. Is there anything that Ray or I could do to help you I don't know, get a better opinion of the Who Would Win shows or something we can do to present our arguments a little bit better. How would you want us? How can we repair this relationship between the show and Roger Craig Smith?
Well, first of all, that's just you're singing my praises as an actor in the fact that you didn't pick up on the fact that I make it seem like we get along and that I'm enthusiastic about doing these things.
God
damn
it.
Purely self-centered, I assure you, James. No, I would say, if anything, just, I don't know, maybe you guys could like amp it up a little bit. Or like maybe Ray could get a little bit more excited about certain things. You know, like I know he normally is just kind of like a wallflower and kind of sits back and lets you just kind of like, you know, just like run all over him.
Sure.
But yeah, I feel like if there's like a little bit more energy or just something excitable about the two of you guys, or if there was good conflict or like maybe like a playful banter that you guys could explore or something along those lines, maybe you guys would have, you know, a series. But I don't know. I look, who am I to say? I just, you know, I'm just happy that you're happy to have me here again, because I feel like really and truly I'm kind of keeping the whole thing afloat.
I Ray, am known through the boardroom as the Eeyore of the Who Would Win show. No energy, lethargic. Yeah. I bring no passion to the table,
no.
But I'm here for the checks, Roger. You got to understand.
I understand. Well, as am I. I mean, that's the whole reason that I'm here.
Fair.
Is it's a payday. So I find it funny that James was like, you know, yeah, I thought we were good. You know, it's like, well, yeah, as long as the Venmo comes through.
Thank you.
You know
what, Roger? First, it's you, right? And then I found out earlier today, it's my wife. And then, you know, my parents. Like, is there anyone I don't have to pay to say that, hey, we're cool with each other? I don't know what's going on these days.
Jeez, when are you going to take the hint, dude? It's just, come on. It's
damn
so
it.
Staring
Why
you right
was
in
I
the face.
Born so rich and good looking with such a horrible personality? You can't have it all, Roger Craig Smith.
I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I woke up and said the exact same thing, James. I will say this, in all honesty, the reason why I'm giving up a very important Tuesday evening to be here with you guys is because, in all honesty, I make jokes. Again, maybe some of my acting chops were coming through earlier when people might have really not understood that I was not being sincere.
What?
But that I was, I know. This is, look, I am the Dennis Quaid of the Who Would Win show, even though Randy won. But no, you guys put on such a great show, and it's always fun, and it's literally, it is a challenging seat to be sitting in, to be having to make these decisions, and in real time, having to write down notes. We're coming into this one with me having very little knowledge of either one of these franchises or the characters. But you guys put on such a great show, and I'm happy to be here, and you guys are the best at what you do, and it's always a treat and a pleasure to sit here, and I cannot wait to irritate your audience with my horrible decision at the end of this.
So, look, all kidding aside, when we finally get to the decision, every time I've been on the show, I literally, like, grab a bucket of popcorn, you know, go on mute so no one hears me eating popcorn, and I'm just listening, taking all of this in, picturing, literally, in my mind, exactly this amazing story you're telling and what have you. Whoever gets pissed off, whoever loves the story, bottom line, everyone gets treated to an epic, epic decision whenever you're on the show.
Oh boy.
And that's the bottom line, because yeah, I said so. All right, look, we have an epic judge on the show. We've got Leatherface. We've got Pyramid Head. This is crazy. It's time to get things started. Ray, you know what you got to do. Please do us the honors and announce today's matchup.
Representing horror cinema, the killer who once ate a clown and can confirm it did in fact taste funny, Leatherface. And representing Silent Hill, the executioner who auditioned to be in the movie Mannequin, but thankfully was never allowed near the set. If you know, then you know. Pyramid Head.
Well done, Ray. Now,
there's
before
like
we go any further,
there's three people who are freaking out that I just said that, just for the record. And those are the awkward allies.
Got it. I'm assuming there's no one on the show who's other than yourself freaking out, but you know,
not
hey, that's
a
what
single
we do.
One.
Okay, air quotes. Well done, Ray. Before we go any further, let's go over the basics of a Who Would Win match. Now, each debater will make 3 points. Keep in mind that the Who Would Win match is a random encounter in a neutral location with no prior knowledge or prep time allowed. And the debater has to stay within the confines of the character. And when it comes to determining the winner, it's the judge who has the final say and will determine which character lost based on death, incapacitation, or battlefield removal, with no outsider interference being allowed. Remember, you can always check out all the rules on our website at www.whowouldwinshow.tv. And before we get started, don't forget to visit the official Who Would Win store. Visit sayward.co/collections. That's sayward.co/collections. And click on the Who Would Win merch section to get your hands on some great Who Would Win shirts, hats, hoodies, and our very own proprietary 3D printed Who Would Win versus stand. And now let's get to the tale of the tape for both of our combatants. Ray, please give us the details for Pyramid Head.
Pyramid Head is the manifestation of inner trauma and perhaps most iconic character from the video game Silent Hill 2. He was created by Masahiro Ito and first appeared in the aforementioned Silent Hill 2 back in 2001. Now, when main character James Sunderland received a letter from his wife telling him to meet her in Silent Hill, he took notice, mainly because his wife was dead. Embarking on a journey to the town, James encountered many monsters, one of which was Pyramid Head. Pyramid Head was, many years ago, one of the town's executioners, and now his hood has warped into the angular mask he now wears as he torments everyone in town, monsters, people, but especially James. James. His creator wanted to create a personal monster for James in the game, who for story reasons feels tremendous amounts of guilt for the events surrounding his wife's death in the first place. Okay. Fun fact. This is wild. The Silent Hill series is known for being creepy, scary, and very, very depressing. But did you know that their inspiration for an elementary school classroom was not any of that at all? It's true. When developing the Midwich Elementary School classroom, the Japanese creators, they needed to use an American school classroom for reference, right? What classroom did they pick? It was the classroom from the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Kindergarten Cop. They used Kindergarten Cop's classroom to make Silent Hill. So the next time that gem of a film is on TNT or whatever, remember it has an unintended darker side. And that is Silent Hill, so therefore that is Pyramid Head.
Unbelievable. Here are the important details for Leatherface. Now, Leatherface is the central antagonist of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise, originally created by director Tobe Hooper and co-written by Kim Henkel. He made his first appearance in the groundbreaking 1974 horror film, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, of course, and he was characterized by his grotesque mask made from the skin of his victims and his weapon of choice, a roaring chainsaw. Leatherface embodies raw, unbridled terror. Yeah, I'll say that. His lack of verbal communication and dependence on his cannibalistic family, I'm not sure if I'm reading about Leatherface or Race to Canis, add layers of complexity to his menacing presence, making him an enduring icon in horror cinema. In the 2003 remake and his 2006 prequel, titled The Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, respectively, which is, by the way, the version of Leatherface we'll be using today, Leatherface is given a more detailed backstory in the name Thomas Brown Hewitt. Born with a disfiguring skin disease and abandoned as a child, again talking about Race to Canis, he's adopted by the Hewitt family, who nurture his violent tendencies, and hijinks ensue. And here's an interesting fact about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Did you know that there was a video game based on the movie back in the 80s? It's true. An adult-themed video game adaptation became a nightmare for Wizard Games in 1983 when the studio brought the Texas Chainsaw Massacre to the Atari 2600, because how could that be a bad idea? Although the game was just an insane primitive mess of pixels, those pixels were deemed offensive enough for most retailers to refuse to carry the game, and the ones that did stock it hid the game evidently under the counter as to not to offend any parents coming in. Video games for adults weren't really a thing back then, so it comes as no surprise that the first one to cast players as a chainsaw-wielding psychopath with no objectives beyond mass slaughter. That's it. The whole point of the game was just to kill as many people as you could. That whole thing was sunk by controversy, and yes, sales somehow were horrible. And now you have the facts on both opponents. Roger, do you have any questions before we get started?
No.
Great.
No, I mean, legitimately, no. I think you both did a great job of giving a backstory. I find it funny, some of the little the quirks. You know, yeah, I'm never going to be able to see, you know, it's not a tuma the same way. And yeah, the idea of now I want to go back and kind of go, oh, I wonder if any of my friends have like that old copy from the Atari 2600. That, yeah. But no. Great job as always. Good amounts of like, okay, compelling, interesting, where this could go. Nobody knows.
I love it. This has the makings of an epic matchup. All right, Ray, do what you do. Hit us with your point number one.
Point number one for Pyramid Head. Let's just talk a little bit about who he is and how strong he is, because this is where he's definitely got, I think, some edges here. So Pyramid Head, he's got basically a human being shape. You know, he's kind of got an athletic build, and he's got a giant pyramid head. I guess that should be obvious from his name, but essentially he's wearing a gigantic metal helmet, which does not allow him to see, but we'll get into that a little bit later. The big thing, though, is that he is sort of a supernatural type creature from the world of Silent Hill, brought about by the intense guilt and anguish that the main character feels. So as I said in the intro, he is a manifestation of a lot of negative emotions sent to punish him throughout the game, right? What does all this kind of relate to? Well, he wields a giant blade. I found out through this, I didn't know this, it's actually referred to as half a pair of scissors. So he basically took a gigantic, and we're talking like 6 foot long, pair of scissors, very heavy, and he ripped pieces off of it and uses this to swing at and hit people with and stab them through with. Now, it's so heavy that he actually has to drag it behind him when he moves around, right? But he could swing it real, real hard because he's strong and it's a very powerful, heavy weapon. It's just not the type of thing that he can do fencing with, if that makes a lot of sense here. Typically, if he hits you full on in the game with the sword, you're done. He one-shots James. And I like the fact that the protagonist who he fights is named James. It really does make this episode way more fun for me. Let me just say, I've seen him take this sword and he impaled a guy with it, right? Lifted him up out of the air and then split him into two pieces, essentially. I think some pieces were still hanging on. Welcome to Shocktober, kids. I've seen him take this giant sword and swing it through bricks and destroy them. Swing it through steel, like steel gates and whatnot, and completely destroy them. So whatever, just like in Rocky IV, whatever he punches, he destroys. Whatever Pyramid Head hits with the giant sword, he destroys. I don't see Leatherface being able to take any hits off of this weapon whatsoever. Just saying. He's also, though, strong enough to use his giant sword to block incoming attacks when he has to, which is kind of wild to see in action. It's unwieldy, it's a little bit slow, but he could still maneuver it to block things coming in. Wild. Additionally, Pyramid Head has a second weapon, which is a spear. And it's a spear that's not quite as powerful, but it's also not quite as heavy, allowing him to use it with a little bit more panache. And he can also throw it from a distance. Now, if we cut over to the movie really quick, because I'm kind of doing not a full composite, but I wanted to mention a couple great moments. Because in the movie, one of the most outrageous things I've ever seen in a horror film happened, where he was chasing our main characters into like a chapel, and he's dragging this woman with him who's screaming. And he grabs her, lifts her in the air, rips all her skin off with one pull, and then throws it across the way, hitting the chapel door as they are closing it. In one of the most holy bleep moments I've ever seen. If you've seen it, you know. If you haven't, at least find it on YouTube. It is upsetting, to say the least. But my goodness, a guy who can rip the skin off of somebody probably is going to be able to do some terrible things to Leatherface. Additionally, he doesn't just fight the people in Silent Hill 2. I mentioned before, he fights the other monsters as well. He's sort of the king of the jungle of the monsters that exist in Silent Hill, and he sort of beats on them when he's not beating on people. Leatherface doesn't necessarily fight monsters. He fights people who are not equipped to deal with him. But Pyramid Head fights everybody, right? And James struggles to even fight them, usually needing to just stick and move, run away, and hope some sort of nebulous timer runs out. Not going to happen for Leatherface, though, and all of that is my point number one.
All right, you know, I'm really intrigued by this helmet. You know, it's interesting because both Ray and I, when we were younger, are very accustomed to having to have worn helmets for many years, so we get how a helmet can, you know, block your hearing or impede your hearing, you know, your senses and what have you. Evidently, he's kind of blind where he's got it on, and as a result, not only does he have a sword kind of thing that he has to kind of, you know, thrust or slash with in a very, very slow way, he doesn't really have, unless he knows exactly where you are, because he's got to really pinpoint you somehow, he's going to miss a lot. And that's what he does. He misses a lot. On top of that, he telegraphs. It's so heavy. You see it coming from a mile away. And someone who's not afraid of it and someone who's got some good timing, which is exactly who Leatherface is, can time the swings, kind of dash in, dash out, what have you. And they're going to get in and have fun, you know, wrecking this person. In terms of ripping, you know, skin off of someone, yeah, Leatherface has a career of doing that over decades. That's why it's Leatherface. Go to his basement sometime and you'll see like lamps and all that kind of horrible stuff. And there's skin and just blah, 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 blah. Because he rips skin off of his victims all day, every day. And he loves it. It's just a thing for him. Now, let me get to my point number one. Let's talk about the physicality of Leatherface. Now, the reason why I picked this version of the character is because when I first moved to L.A., I got friendly with this actor named Andrew Bernarski. This is the person who was actually Leatherface. And he got to tell me about this character in depth and what have you. Andrew Bernarski, by the way, is 6'5". At the time, he was 300. Probably, he's probably like 320 right now. He is a big, huge, highly intelligent, hulking Viking of a man who, when he and I trained some kickboxing at Gold's Gym, he one time missed the tie pads, kicked me in the head so hard on the left side of my face, I only felt it on the right side of my face. This guy is a beast, and that is the starting point for this person, because now magnify that physicality quite a bit, and that's your starting point for this character. Now, in terms of brute strength, Leatherface isn't just strong. He's a powerhouse. His daily routine of, let's just say, manual labor has turned him into a muscle-bound force in nature. He can lift and carry heavy objects. He can hold up a person with ease and toss him as well. And remember, this is going to be a head-on battle where Pyramid Head has at least one, possibly two hands occupied with that huge sword. On top of that, Leatherface is insanely agile for a big guy. It's quite surprising. He can sprint, chase, navigate through tight and open spaces just like a cat. This guy is really, really crazy. He can pop out of nowhere. His nimbleness can help him dodge Pyramid's, you know, really slow, heavy swings, as I mentioned before. And because he can appear from out of nowhere, he may just have what Ray calls slasher portation, where he can somehow teleport from one spot to another in the same way Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers can. He's also got an insane pain tolerance. This guy shrugs off injuries, he'll put others down for the count, bumps, bruises, serious wounds. They just don't slow him down. His ability to keep going despite pains means he might have to take a shot from Pyramid Head, one, maybe two. It's not going to slow him down. He's not going to back off. He's going to get in there and just do what he has to do. He's got seemingly endless stamina, by the way. He just doesn't tire out. You know, he's chasing after victims all day in the Texas heat, by the way. That's crazy. And this is conditioned to keep moving without resting. I don't know how that works. It's just a thing. In a battle of endurance, he might just outlast Pyramid Head because we just don't know how long Pyramid Head could last in a crazy battle. He's got super quick reflexes. He's got sharp instincts. He can react super quick. And listen, this is someone who's really, really going to be able to react very, very fast. This is going to be a speed versus deliberate, very slow telegraph movements in terms of a fight. He's got very, very thick skin. And all I mean by that, he's got crazy durability. He can tank physical impacts that would literally kill anyone else. He can stand on his feet and keep fighting even when things get insanely rough for him. We see it in all the films. And he's highly unpredictable. Look, he moves in really erratic and unexpected ways. He'll lunge at you wildly. He'll suddenly charge at you from a weird angle. This person is just out of their mind, insane, and unfortunately great at what they do because he's got this ferocious tenacity. Look, once he's locked onto a target, he's not going to give up. And this is that relentless determination means he's just going to keep coming at Pyramid Head with everything he's got at high intensity without getting tired. This is something I just don't think Pyramid Head is ready for. All that is my point number one.
All right. No, I mean, you make a couple of good points and then have a little bit of nonsense sprinkled in right there. I mean, one thing I will say out loud, Leatherface is not what I would consider a refined fighter. I'm excited that you were doing Muay Thai kickboxing with the actor who played Leatherface, but let's not get it twisted and pretend that Leatherface in his movies is dropping some Saga Tiger uppercuts like in Street Fighter 2. It's just not going to happen with Leatherface. He's very one-dimensional in the way that he attacks people with his chainsaw. And in my point number two, I'll illustrate that it's probably not going to be enough to actually like hurt Pyramid Head, keep down Pyramid Head, because Pyramid Head is literally a personal demon. We've heard that expression before, but for the main character of Silent Hill 2, Pyramid Head is his literal personal demon. That puts him on a different level than a regular human being.
I love this battle so far. It's like, you know, insane, somewhat, you know, powerful being versus a personal demon in physical manifest type of form. We got to see what the judge has to say. Roger Craig Smith, you've heard one point from both Ray and myself. Where's your head at so far with this battle?
Right now, it's coming down to whether or not, for me, right now, I'm kind of going, okay, Ray brought up some incredible points about range and reach. And, you know, we've got not only just the one weapon, but we've got, you know, this massive sword. But I believe, Ray, you said he's also got a spear of some sort. So we've got range and ability to attack from afar, or at least, you know, from a good distance. But then I just think about Leatherface with like his durability, his relentlessness. And once he gets in close, I think Leatherface is going to be delivering an incredible amount of damage. It is, as ever, it's anybody's match as of now. I need to hear more.
I really think this matchup will be listed as one of the most insane battles ever on the Who Would Win show. This matchup is heating up. It's going to be insane. Stay tuned for point number two.
There are many reasons why you might want to learn a new language. Maybe you're looking to improve your resume and switch jobs. Hey, maybe you want to be more in touch with your family overseas. I don't know, maybe you just want to watch anime in its original form. Well, the folks at Rosetta Stone are here to help you get started, and they are ready to immerse you in the language that you want to learn. Look, Rosetta Stone has been at the top of their game for decades now, and they are bringing it with 25 languages that will get you understanding and speaking fast with their time-tested process. Hey, a lifetime membership gives you access to everything. I'm just saying. Anyway, you can learn anytime, anywhere, on your desktop or in the app, and it's not just one-sided instruction. No, True Accent is a feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation, so it's like a personal trainer, but it's for your accent, not your triceps, right? Well, don't put off learning that language anymore. There's no better time than right now to get started. Now, Who Would Win show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Just visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. Rosetta Stone, up your culture game.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
And we're back. Ray, let's see what you got. Here's your point number two.
Point number two. See, in point number one, we went with his offense and how strong he is and all that. Let's talk about his durability, though, as well. Because he's a character that, even more so in the Silent Hill 2 games, yes, if he hits you, there's a very real chance he one-shots you with the giant sword, but also you have to heap piles and piles and piles of damage on him in the game, and that really doesn't even bring him down, or at least bring him down for any good period of time. We could talk at the end about how he is eventually defeated. Hint, it's not with a chainsaw. I'll just put it out there. Now, Pyramid Head, as I said before, he has a very athletic build. It is sort of, it feels like sort of magically enhanced athletic build, but he does seem to shrug off pain a lot of the time. I've seen Pyramid Head get shot. I've seen him get stabbed. I mean, and shot with like a pistol, but also a shotgun. And he gets all these, all these injuries, and then he just keeps on going forward, right? I mean, maybe it's because it's an older game, but you see a little blood effect shoot off of him, but he doesn't really stagger. He doesn't really stop moving. James is correct in that he is much more methodical in how he takes his movements, but that's because he's a walking tank. He can be methodical. His whole deal is that he has intention behind everything that he's doing. His whole gimmick is to corner you as the victim, slowly move towards you, playing a little 4D chess, making sure he gets you into a position where you have to go through him to get out, because he backs you into a literal corner. And then as soon as he gets you in a position where you're there, he's just going to waylay you, and he's going to wallop you, and he's going to take you out of the game. And Leatherface, if he tries to be very offensive in this battle, you said, Roger, that if Leatherface gets in, he could do a lot of damage. Quite honestly, if he gets into the point where Pyramid Head can get a grab of him and grab a hold of his skin on his back or on his chest and just give him a good old yank, I don't think Leatherface is going to be too happy or too desirous of fighting much longer. I think he's going to back off, like I would say, a scalded dog. Please don't do that. But I think that absolutely he would get pain, and the pain would cause him to back up. But durability-wise, I've seen Pyramid Head take an axe to the side and shrug it off with no problem. I've seen him like get hit with a fiery explosion and just stand in the middle of it and keep on walking forward, right? And he's also got the armor as well. Leatherface has basically got, what, overalls on? Not that Pyramid Head is overtly armored, but he has the giant Pyramid Head, right? It's a huge helmet, and it's immune to all forms of gunfire. I would also believe because of that, it's immune to chainsaw attacks as well. I think it would repel the chainsaw, giving him the opening he needs to really land a coup de grace type of attack. Also, hiding is no good because despite the fact that Pyramid Head can't see, he seems to feel like a sensory, a presence, a detector everywhere that he is, and he always seems to know where his victims are. You could hide from him, and he might just decide not to mess with you at that time, but it's not because he doesn't know that you are there. He can't see, but somehow he could see better, right? I don't want to say it's like a Daredevil echolocation type thing. I think it's much more sensory and magical than that. So at the end of the day, I've seen Leatherface in other situations I'll get to in my next counterpoint, but I've seen him take some hits in his movies that have definitely kept him down. Whereas Pyramid Head, that doesn't quite so much happen. So if they're doing equal shots to each other, I think eventually Leatherface will be the one to lose that game of chicken. And that's my point number two.
I mean, everything you're saying about Pyramid Head is actually really, really interesting. But I do have to push back on a couple of things. Now, first of all, you know, you're playing into the also possibly the video game version of this character. And the video game version of Pyramid Head does have a health bar where if enough damage is done, they retreat or something else happens. But it's not like they stay absolutely fine. It's not like the Juggernaut, who's absolutely fine. The more you hit them, the more he's fine like that. So damage will hurt him. And if anyone can do insane levels of damage very quickly, it's Leatherface. On top of the helmet. Now, this is interesting to me because when you look at fighting tactics and techniques, Leatherface isn't a headshot type of guy. He's someone who's going to go for the torso, hook you through a shoulder or go through your, you know, thoracic cavity or any other insidey place that's, you know, body. He's like, you know, if he was going to be someone who used a gun, he'd be shooting center mass of the body as opposed to trying to shoot you in the head. That's just more of his MO. So the helmet that he's wearing, which is super impressive, I'm sure very durable, is not actually going to be a factor in any way, shape, or form for Leatherface because it just doesn't play anywhere into his fighting tactics or strategies, if you will. Now, let me get to my point number two. And let's talk about Leatherface's fighting abilities and his styles. Now, of course, Leatherface is what I call a chainsaw maestro extraordinaire. He doesn't just wield a chainsaw. He owns it. He's mastered it. He has unparalleled skill with this roaring beast. He turns it into a freaking extension of himself. He can go fast. He can go deadly. This is something that's definitely going to catch Pyramid Head off guard. Leatherface is also a master of the meat hook, where he impales it on a victim, like hooks it into them. Sorry, kids at home, this is going to get gross. And when he does, the meat hook gives him extra leverage to pull and drag, you know, that person's body to wherever he wants to go. Of course, he's already really strong, but now he's extra strong because he's just holding on to the meat cleaver as opposed to holding on to a body themselves. This person's disturbing. I love it. He's also brutal in a close quarters combat type of situation. He's absolutely a force to be reckoned with in tight spaces. And that's where he thrives when things get up close and personal, which is where he's going to have to be to get inside that range of that sword. And this is where he uses that raw strength and ferocity just to kind of go nuts on either his targets or his opponents. This is fun to watch. He's also highly unpredictable. I touched on this in the last point. And his fighting style, I don't know, the best way to say it, it's anything but conventional. He's got swings, sudden lunges. He keeps his foes guessing. It's really difficult to figure out what he's about to do next. And Pyramid Head will not be able to anticipate his moves, especially moves direction really, really fast. Let's see, he's operating on insanely highly trained animalistic instincts over decades that are somehow refined into a crazy fighting style. He reacts really swiftly to threats. He can sense stuff coming at him, get out of the way. He can hide when he has to. Again, 6'5", 300. This person can actually get out of the way very, very well. And this leads me to my next thing. Leatherface is also a master of the ambush. He can stay hidden and silent and completely surprise his targets. In one of the films, the main hero, she's driving away. She thinks she's got away. She sees police officers and two police cars in front of her. She breathes a sigh of relief. and then screams in terror as somehow, the 300-plus pound Leatherface appears in the seat behind her with the chainsaw, mind you, already active somehow. She didn't hear it going on, and he plunges it through the seat, through her stomach and chest cavity, and just, you know, slashes her completely apart, leaves her head alone, by the way, and then crashes the car into the two police officers, send them flying, and he gets out, two police officers down, she's dead, and he's just walking away, and that's the end of the movie. He's actually kind of the sole survivor hero of the movie. This thing is, I don't know, he's almost got what I would call Batman-level stealth with that example alone. He's also great at using his terrain. He knows how to navigate his environment really, really well. Look, it's a neutral location, so we don't know where this is. Whatever it is, though, we know that Leatherface can use that to his advantage, because wherever he is in the Texas Chainsaw Massacres, a forest, a clearing, a road, a basement, he knows how to use that terrain like no one's business. That's something that Pyramid Head can't do. And, you know, on top of that, this is someone who is insanely resourceful. He can use improvised weapons. He can turn everyday objects into something lethal. Think bone shards or metal scraps. And he hurls them with deadly intent. Anything he can grab and adapt to what he needs to do to tear someone apart, he's going to do. This person is great at switching weapons on the fly. Listen, this isn't even including how Leatherface can set up traps. I'm not sure how he's doing this, but it's something he could do. And he's going to manipulate the environment to his advantage. There's so much that Leatherface can do that we just think, oh, he's an animal. He doesn't always. No. This is a person who's got decades of experience doing what he does. That's, again, something Pyramid Head is not ready for. That's my point number two.
I mean, he's got decades of experience doing what he does against, like, teenagers and against people who are ill-equipped to fight back against him. That's the key right there, is if you biff the bully in the snoot, as we used to say, they tend to rethink some of their decisions. Now, the idea of a stealth chainsaw attack is one of the most bizarre things I've ever heard of in my life. That is some weird writing, but I'll be straight with you. I'm here for it. That's delightful. The one big weakness that I think Pyramid Head has in a general battle is range. He can make some attacks with the thrown spear, sure, but if he's fighting against somebody with some sort of a firearm and lots of ammunition from a distance, he has trouble closing that distance sometimes, unless it's in a more contained environment. But Leatherface doesn't fight like that. Leatherface likes to get right in your face and come after it. Now, I've seen Leatherface get knocked unconscious in his movies before and then left in a bog at the end of the movie to essentially drown. But he didn't. He came back in the next one. But I've also seen a Leatherface lose a limb in a fight to a teenager. And I'll be honest with you, I've never seen Pyramid Head take that big a loss from that weak an opponent.
Hey, last week we had the Creeper who lost to teenagers, and somehow that was not counted as a horrible thing. Who knows? Teenagers are getting tough these days. Not going to lie, they're getting pretty tough. All right, listen, we're at the turning point. Roger, you've had a moment to ponder 2 points from both Ray and myself. Who do you think is ahead, and what does the other side have to do to pull out the victory?
I think right now, teenagers are ahead. Clearly, you know, it's a little frightening to think what's going on with teenagers and their ability to dismember. Guys, round two, incredible points. I honestly, when you pulled out the skin yanking and you were like, look, I mean, like, you know, helmet versus leather and that kind of thing, I started going, oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so he comes in, he's got the helmet. Of course, that's, you know, that's way better than just like a, you know, a skin helmet made of other people's skin, that kind of thing. However, you know, James brought up some really great points about adaptation, the ability to improvise using anything that's in his environment. I found myself leaning more towards Ray in that round two, but James, you brought up some really, really great points. Again, I just kind of find myself thinking, yeah, you know, these fighting styles are too sort of, they're not the same at all, but they really present issues for one another because of the way that they do up close damage, a little bit of a range damage. They're limited by some of the very tools that they're using. But they're also, that's the very thing that makes them formidable. But the fact that we've got helmet versus skin versus sensibility versus improv versus environment, I am, again, normally I'm going to lean one direction until one of you guys, you got to step it up. It's still, and it's up for grabs.
This is a really intriguing battle. It's almost like an old school UFC grappler versus striker kind of thing where someone could take advantage of the other one's weakness and could go the other way as well. Things are heating up. Let's see what happens. Stay tuned for point number three. And we're back. Ray, it is now time for your point number three. If you're going to go for a knockout blow, now's the time to do it. Show us what you got.
Okay, so we're going to talk about some of Pyramid Head's other powers and just sort of really deep dive into who he is and why he does what he does. Now, first thing that really separates these two is the mystical powers that Pyramid Head has, because Leatherface is kind of straightforward, right? He's a big, tough guy with a chainsaw, and he's a little crazy, sure. But Pyramid Head can summon hordes of insects around him and has done so in multiple game titles, where he can walk in and he has, I'm not just talking like a few insects, I'm talking that will go up to like his knees, and it's just a giant pile of them around him. And he can summon them and use them to distract his opponent and get in the way. I could see Leatherface trying to swat away the insects, allowing Pyramid Head to get in and take the shot. But he can also use the insects to attack his opponent as well and do, like, you know, death by a thousand cuts. You take a whole lot of little insect damage. Yes, it will distract you, but it's also going to, you know, bring you down. It's going to make you lose some blood. It's going to soften you up for an eventual final battle, right? And also, let's talk about where he comes from, because I'm glad you brought up the slasher portation for Leatherface. I don't think he does it quite the same way like a Michael Myers or a Jason Voorhees does, but he definitely has part of that in his repertoire. But with Pyramid Head, it's weird because he seems to get conjured from like pools of blood. He seems to appear in a room with you, like the lights will go off. You ever see like The Undertaker from like 20 years ago in WWE, where the lights to the arena go off, they come back on and he's standing in the ring right there with you? That's what Pyramid Head kind of does, to be honest with you. It's not exactly slasher portation, but when he makes his appearance, he often has you in a bad place in a small environment, and you are ill-equipped to even know that he was going to come. And given that this is a random encounter in a neutral location, Leatherface is not going to necessarily see Pyramid Head coming, and he's going to have to deal with him very, very quickly, right? Also, an interesting thing about Pyramid Head is that he seems to have this weird aura around him. And by that, I mean when he walks around a location, no matter where it is, he sort of transmits the aura of Silent Hill, the city itself, where everything's rusted and decrepit and decaying, to like 2 feet, 3 feet around him at all times. So if he fights you outside of kind of the nightmare world of Silent Hill, you still got to deal with the fact that he's still in his own environment, even when he is not. And that'll mess with your mind, if nothing else. And let's talk about it a little bit further. He's not really killable, per se. He's only defeated in the games for good when James, the main character, gets past his grief over the death of his wife, right? Pyramid Head exists as a personal demon due to guilt of the main character, right? And and at the end of the day, Pyramid Head actually kills himself with his spear through the head. He just leans on it and goes when James finally moves on past that feeling of morbidity and guilt, right? Leatherface has killed a lot of people. I think we can agree on that, right? He's killed a lot of innocent people. Does he have a certain amount of guilt deep down at the bottom? I think maybe he does. Is that something that he's going to get over through the course of a battle, you know, metaphorically? Does he feel at the end of the day, does Leatherface feel, that he must be punished in some way? I would argue that the answer to that is yes. I would argue that's yes because he's often doing it to try to impress his family, and his family often still treats him like dirt. His family still doesn't give him the respect that I think he's yearning for all the time. So I think at the end of the day, he doesn't feel good enough. Yeah, I'm going for psychological here. I think Leatherface deep down does in fact feel guilty and that he must be punished. And the only real way in a regular encounter to avoid Pyramid Head is essentially you have to run away from him for an extended period of time until like a siren goes off in the distance. And then he decides to take off. That's the way you beat him in a neutral, a random encounter, right? That's how it happens in the game. You just got to avoid him. Does Leatherface strike you as the kind of guy who's going to run away? Does he strike you as the kind of guy who's going to avoid his opponent? No. The way James has been describing it, right? He's going to go in, try to do his damage, but he's fighting a mystical creature. And that's not going to work, right? And then he's going to get shredded eventually, probably by the giant blade. All of this together, psychological, physical, emotional, That's all my point number three.
You know, again, so many great reasons to love this character, whether it's the video game version or the live action film version. You know, this is the thing. The psychological stuff around these characters is so interesting. And the reason why I went with this version of Leatherface, again, because I got to know the actor who portrayed Leatherface, Andrew Bednarski, again, great guy. He goes still to a bunch of horror cons. Check him out. Go say hi to him. He's really cool to talk to. And I got to talk to him about this character. And he said, okay, this character is this, they're that. The one thing he said about this character is they do not feel guilt over what they are doing. There's no guilt that they are feeling whatsoever for killing these people. There's actually only happiness and glee because he feels his family, who he is trying to get on constant approval from, that's who he wants to please. So the more people he kills, the happier he is. He doesn't see people as people unless they're his family, in which case they are people. It's a weird thing. He just doesn't feel guilt over anything he's doing in these horrible, horrible manners in these movies. He's right. He said something interesting, too, that the environment of Pyramid Head comes around him, you know, in 3 feet diameter or whatever circumference. Cool. There's a city with broken down stuff. All of a sudden, there's chunks of materials that all of a sudden Leatherface can use as improvised weapons. That's not a good thing to have. You know, you think it's a cool thing. All of a sudden, Leatherface is like, great, more stuff to kill someone with. I'm in. So I don't know if that will be too helpful with them. And again, this is a really interesting match because just as Pyramid Head has some strengths, he's got some crazy weaknesses. And let's start in my point number three, and let's just go right there. Let's just discuss the weaknesses of Pyramid Head and how I think this fight's going to go down. So Pyramid Head has something in common with Ghost Rider, the character. Okay, let me explain. So, you know, Ray, you talked about the existential limitations, how he's tied to James' specific, you know, guilt and punishment. In a neutral setting without that psychological anchor, he might not be operating at full strength. And this gives Leatherface a real good opportunity to kind of at least damage him, do some good stuff to him. More importantly, Pyramid Head is driven by that singular purpose. And again, it's to punish someone for their guilt. You know who doesn't feel guilty? I just said it. It's Leatherface. And again, this is like Ghost Rider, who can like take out Galactus because he uses penance stare to make someone feel guilty about all of the innocent lives they've taken. Try that with Leatherface. He doesn't feel any guilt whatsoever. It's kind of like when Ghost Rider tried to put the penance stare on the Punisher, and Punisher's like, no one's innocent. They all deserved it, and nothing happened. He's absolutely fine. Same thing, same situation right now, same dynamic. Pyramid Head, by the way, he's not also the thinking type. He doesn't adapt his tactics based on his opponent's actions. And Leatherface, one thing he is insanely creative and is what he's going to use to kill someone, his strategies, his change-up of his attacks. This is all going to keep Pyramid Head really guessing and off balance. Also, Ray, you talked about that siren going off. Now, if the siren goes off, whatever Pyramid Head is doing, evidently, he stops, turns around, and walks out of the room towards whatever is calling him through that siren. Well, again, I do believe that the stamina, the psychotic-fueled stamina of Leatherface is at the very least going to keep him in this fight for a very long time. It might even be better than Pyramid Head's. Well, if the fight keeps going, evidently, the siren will go off, and all of a sudden, Pyramid Head, by design, will turn around and walk away. If that punish, or again, he might just kill himself. Because, again, the guilt is not working on Leatherface. On top of that, look, he's a tall, big, strong person who moves super slow. It's not going to work that well. Bugs coming out of him? You're talking about Leatherface, who lives in filth and bugs in his basement, where he takes apart people and leaves body parts and skin around for weeks, days, years. He's already living with bugs and all that kind of stuff. To him, that's just called Tuesday. Everything's absolutely fine. Look, here's how this fight's going to go down. This is a sudden encounter on neutral ground. Leatherface and Pyramid are going to face off. Leatherface, look, instinctively, he starts revving his chainsaw. He notices Pyramid's head's slow, deliberate movements, the massive big knife he drags behind him. And this is where he uses that surprising agility and raw ferocity for his size. And he darts around Pyramid Head. He exploits that limited field of vision caused by the heavy, obscuring helmet. Remember, Leatherface is a master of wearing makeshift masks and head coverings. He knows from decades of experience what too big of a mask can do to limit your vision. And he sees what's going on with Pyramid Head. And Pyramid Head is going to attempt that slow, heavy swing. Leatherface is going to dodge really easy and then just close that gap, seize the moment, and just unleash absolute hell in that chainsaw on Pyramid's head. And that's the whole thing. And this is going to go on and on. Leatherface might get hit a couple of times, but at the end, he's going to be doing crazy damage as well. And one of two things is going to happen. Either the siren goes off and Pyramid Head walks out, battlefield removing him from the battle, giving Leatherface the win, or more likely, no guilt. No feeling of punishment has to be given because, again, Leatherface feels no guilt whatsoever. And what happens when Pyramid Head is facing off against an opponent, you know, the embodiment of guilt, and then he feels no guilt is being felt? He offs himself. There are so many ways Leatherface can win due to the psychological and spiritual magic, whatever you want to call, limitations and weaknesses that Pyramid has coming into this battle. All of that is my point number three.
I got a lot of stuff to work in right here. Now, first off, you talk about the location around Pyramid Head being Silent Hill is works in the advantage of Leatherface. Well, using video game logic, James, I'll tell you, a lot of those steel racks are just not going to move. Those are out of bounds areas you cannot interact with in these video game situations. And the siren itself, is that not outside interference? Is it not run by somebody else outside of the battle? Should that not even be on the table? I would argue that it probably should not be. And one thing that I've seen with Leatherface in his movies is he's very territorial, right? He's used to fighting in the safety of his own home or surrounding area. If we're fighting in a neutral location outside of his comfort zone, he is, you know, a little more mentally, intellectually challenged, right, than some of the other monsters out there. And he does revert to sort of childlike behavior from time to time. Notice, it's not necessarily the movie you're talking about, but in the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, when strangers come into his home, he actually kind of like hides from them, right? He doesn't like things encroaching on his space. That's why he's always hiding and trying to kill with stealth, right? So what's going to end up happening here is he's not going to want to necessarily be around Pyramid Head, but he is going to try to kill him with some sort of stealth attack. But quite honestly, it's not going to work. And what happens with Leatherface when his home is, you know, threatened, he doesn't know exactly what to do. He's going to revert to childlike behavior. Maybe he shuts down entirely. Maybe he just starts crying. Maybe when he realizes he can't kill, he realizes he's going to let his family down, and he just sort of gives up, right? Because he might not feel guilt about killing, sure, but doesn't he not feel guilt about not pleasing his family? Isn't there some form of guilt inside him, killing aside, that Pyramid Head could latch onto? I think the answer is yes. And at the end of the day, we're talking about a magically summoned creature, a literal personal demon, versus a guy wearing human skin. And he's just a guy. Magical creature versus just a guy. I'm going to go with magical creature each and every time.
Who has been defeated by just a guy. All right.
Defeated by Roger. Himself.
Roger, by a guy named James. And here we are yet again. Wow. Roger, you've heard 3 points from both
Redemption
Ray and myself.
Match for both of them.
It's crazy, right? It's time for you to make a decision. But before we get to what Roger has to say, let's celebrate the Who Would Win Patron of the Week. Every week, we choose one of our amazing members from the Who Would Win Show's Patreon community and put them in a battle. Ray, which patron do we have today?
Our patron of the week this week is somebody who's been with us for a little while. We always respect them. We enjoy having them on. Jude Fulton. Jude Fulton is our patron of the week.
Look, Jude Fulton is no joke. The name Jude Fulton in MMA circles brings nothing but fear and dread. So we have to put Jude up against an opponent that does the exact same thing within the ghost and geek culture world. Let's have Jude Fulton go up against the one, the only, Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Oh boy, Casper the Friendly Ghost is going to be rough for anybody because one, as a ghost, Casper is intangible. You can't just punch or kick Casper the Friendly Ghost. Your fist or foot will go right through him, causing no damage whatsoever. But that creates a conundrum because Casper also cannot physically attack you as well. So you have to get into what matters here. And it's not going to be a physical altercation between Jude Fulton and Casper the Ghost. We're going to have to go with some emotional attacks, some verbal attacks, because while you cannot physically harm Casper because he's a ghost, you could hurt his feelings. He is a friendly ghost. He wants to be your friend. So what does he not want to see? Hurling vile insults about him and his family and his house. And he's not going to want to see that. And if I know Casper, he is a sensitive soul. So after realizing the punches and kicks aren't going to work, Jude Fulton is going to say some very derogatory and terrible things about the size of Casper the Ghost's head. And honestly, Casper's going to get upset. He's going to get crying like he was Leatherface in this battle. And he's going to go off on his own, hiding in a closet. Battlefield removal, but it works. The verbal attacks win. Jude Fulton, shame on you, but great job this week.
Jude Fulton, you are a monster. How dare you make fun of a child in ghost form? But you got the win, so congratulations. Remember, you too can become a celebrated patron of the week. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow and sign up, and you may be featured in an upcoming episode of Who Would Win. All right, Roger, it's time for your decision. Take us through your process. Tell us a story, if you will, and reveal who you think wins this battle between Leatherface and Pyramid Head.
Oh my goodness. Gentlemen, this one literally is like I have been struggling with how to... I had a gut kind of reaction in the end, only because you guys both posed such incredible arguments in favor of both your sort of chosen characters here. And honestly, on the third points, I was back and forth so many times because of what both you guys brought to it. I found myself going, oh, okay, so this slasher portation thing is a completely moot point. It's like both of them are capable of incredible being at the right place at the right time. I found myself going, ooh, this lack of guilt, that lack of guilt from Leatherhead, that is a very, very strong argument for Leatherhead because we're talking about the sort of origins of Pyramid Head being a mystical sort of personal demon, you know, brought about by, you know, James's guilt. All of these things had me kind of going, oh my gosh, the bugs, everything. What it really boiled down to for me in the very end, because I did from the early on, I found myself thinking, that close quarters combat, ground and pound, James, if you will, right? Like
the idea
of like getting in close and doing damage, everything that you were bringing up from like torso attacks, things like that. I thought, well, there you go. The helmet's pointless. You know, the chainsaw, like, you know, Leatherface goes right for, you know, the torso. He does the body damage. He's taking you out. You know, you can't fight if you can't stand, so what good is the helmet, right? Like, all those things. I thought, man, this is really going to be it. But in the end, we have two amazing contenders. I found the argument of this siren and whatnot, I found myself trying to think of, like, fight metaphors, right? Who would win? They're in the ring. There's no way with these two guys that it's going to the bell. It's just never going to go that long. It's like both of them are too formidable for one another. So what really came down to, so the idea that like this bell's going to go off, this alarm's going to go off, and, you know, is he going to walk away? Is that going to be the incapacitation, the death, all that stuff? It just came down to me thinking, oh, this is about sort of psychology versus brute strength. You've got two fighters. You've got one who seems to really rely on their tenacity, their lack of guilt, but really the lack of guilt does nothing for you unless you followed up with a lot of strength. But I always think when it comes to like really, really good fighters, it's the one who can keep their head in the game the longest and outwit their opponent. And for me, everything about bringing the environment with him, everything about the mysticality of Pyramid Head, I honestly think in the end, despite how incredibly tenacious and how incredibly strong and really the nail in your coffin, James, for me on these arguments is too many times I felt it violated the spirit of the who would win sort of rules that you were going with your experience having understood what the actor was sharing with you, which was outside of just straight factual character arguments. You were leaning a little too heavy on the actor, and that it all of that kind of tipped it to me just going, I think I got to give this one to Ray, and I think I got to give it to Pyramid. Not to Ray specifically, because I don't think anybody here wants to do that. But I think it's more about that it really, I found myself thinking, you know, I think Pyramid Head's going to win in the end, despite some really solid arguments, James. And who, I mean, none of us want to go up against either one of these guys. But I really do think that if the two of them faced off, despite all that stuff, the close range, the all that, it's Pyramid Head. It's Pyramid Head, not by a wide margin, but it's still Pyramid Head.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm not upset by this decision.
Okay.
Whatsoever. And the reason why is because I knew coming into this battle, it was very much uphill, right? You've got this supernatural being who uses guilt to their advantage and disadvantage as well, who has all this great stuff about them against some massive dude with a lot of issues, right? And some harsh psychological trauma. And this is why, you know, going back to like a Batman, I feel like Batman can win against almost anyone until you kind of take him outside of humanity. And now you have him up against like Etrigan the Demon, or you know what I'm talking about? So this one I'm not upset with. I do like how you gave credence to the fact that this would be a much closer battle than you would think. I do agree with everything presented that Pyramid Head would get the win at the end if you took out the siren and if the guilt was an issue, I do agree with your decision. So Race to Canis, great job. You got the win. Congratulations. That's two in a row for you. Tell Legion of Audience, her fan base, how you feel.
This was a very, very difficult exercise because, you know, we had this a few times on the show before. For example, when I repped the Cloverfield Monster, when I repped Huggy Wuggy, there's a few times that there is very little source material to work with. And you sort of just got to extrapolate, and make the argument work for you without a lot of source material to work with. So in that, I feel really great that I was able to get the victory in this battle, taking not a lot, but making a gourmet meal out of it. I will also say, I also am not upset by this decision. I feel that, of course, it was the correct decision. It's the only decision. And the other thing about this battle that really struck me during the confrontation of it all is of the history of who would win battles. I think this particular battle is the one where the fewest words of dialogue would be spoken between the two characters, because I don't think there would be a single one from either of them. The most quiet battle until we do Dude from A Quiet Place versus Dude from Bird Box. Until we do that battle, this is going to be the quietest battle outside of course, chainsaw and scraping giant sword noises.
Even if it wasn't quiet, I mean, it would be really, really like unintelligible, because both of them would constantly just be kind of like, it's like they've got horrible sort of apparatuses for their
faces. It's like I'm there.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm an actor. Again, going right back to the beginning, I'm an actor.
You know what? And probably have terrible breath, too, if you think about it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Have you ever, had human flesh before? Like, if you don't floss and brush your teeth immediately.
Yeah, no, it's the worst. Yeah.
It's the worst.
Look, travel abroad, James. You don't got to brag.
I know you're from Detroit. I know. It's rampant. One of the reasons I went with the Andrew Bernarski thing, it wasn't just because I was lucky enough to know the guy, what have you. He's actually, in certain Texas Chainsaw Massacre online communities, there's a consensus that that version is the most powerful, physically powerful and demented and capable at killing version of Leatherface in the history of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. See, unlike Ray, I'm not going to just be like, I'm going to use the composite version of this character. But no, in all seriousness, that was the one that is deemed the most powerful, the most ruthless, and the most capable of wrecking things. So I'm like, got to go with that version. Yeah, that's why I did it, Roger Craig Smith. But whatever, fine.
It's fine. No, it's fine. I get it.
It's all good. It's cool. It's all good.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to go with the Russian version of Batman from Superman Red Sun is the best Batman I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, but, there you go.
You know, but I'll change my mind. Actually, that's an amazing character.
We can all be wrong.
Still bowing down to your performance on that. All right, listen, this was insanely fun. Roger Craig Smith, I love having you on the show because it's always a great time. You're hilarious. You're amazing. You always tell a great story with your decision. This is, you know, regardless of who thinks what, it is absolutely awesome. Please come back on the show. Until then, tell the Legion of Audience, our fan base, where they can find you online.
I'm super boring. You just follow me on Twitter and Instagram. That's the only place. I think I have a website. I maintain it once every 6 years, it seems like. So don't bother. It's probably way outdated and the pictures are old and that kind of thing. But no, it's at Roger Craig Smith on both Twitter and Instagram. That's about as out there as I am at this point.
Fantastic. I love it. Race to Canis. You got another win. Congratulations. Tell Legion of Audience where they can find you.
You know, Batman's got to stick together. That's what I say. Of course, I have played Batman in Justice League Mortal audio drama series. Roger Craig Smith has played Batman in slightly larger projects than that, just by a little bit. So I would like to say, when it comes down to it, Batman got Batman. You know what I'm saying? And I appreciate that 1,000%. Look, Pyramid Head, I was a little bit nervous coming into this battle because I knew James was going to pull out all the stops. I knew James was going to have something tricky to say because Pyramid Head is a tricky character to use in a battle like this, because at the end of the day, he didn't get what he wanted, so he offed himself. That's how it happens at the end. Spoiler alert for Silent Hill 2. I won't spoil the rest of it. You got to go play that one for yourself. And quite honestly, I think I'm going to go buy the remake as soon as we're done here as my celebration of Pyramid Head Day. In fact, let's say it. Friday is National Pyramid Head Day. Dress like Pyramid Head when you go into work on Friday. Thankfully, I work from home, so therefore no one will see it. But I want pictures of you on your social media, dressed like Pyramid Head, at your office. You would do that if you had any respect for this show and what I bring to this show. at all. I have a review from September. It's just called Ray is Right from 8Wodel. 8Wodel, thank you so much. 5 stars, of course, which is why I'm going to read it on the air. He says, I wholeheartedly disagree with 90% of the judges. Dr. Robotnik should have beat Captain America. Bizarro should have beaten the Powerpuff Girls. Link should have beaten Luke Skywalker. Ray Stakatis, if you are reading this, you are right, and you deserve more wins than James. Stefan Thomas just is just rigged. Also, for an idea for a future episode, could you at least think about Baymax from Big Hero 6 versus Ridley from Metroid? I don't know who that is.
No.
But they want that for an episode. So tell you what, 8Wodel, you were so kind. I'm going to think about it for the next 1 second. I've done it. Thank you very much for your 5-star review. We love to see them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you podcast. Give us a 5-star review and you might catch my attention and I might read it on the air and make your life finally have meaning. You can find me on Threads at Almighty Ray 316.
Threads.
Threads.
Where a dozen other people may see your stuff and probably not do anything about it.
How dare you?
It's true. I wish there were more. All right, you can find me on X, a.k.a. Twitter, a.k.a. Racy Cadence's favorite social media platform. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook by typing in at James Gavs. And remember to join the official Who Would Win Facebook group to make a suggestion for a matchup for the show and be part of our growing community. You can also find us on Instagram, Threads, oddly enough, and TikTok at Who Would Win Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you go for your podcasts. On behalf of myself, Race Cicanus, and the rest of the amazing Who Would Win production team, thank you once again for checking out another episode of Who Would Win. We'll see you next time.
Hey gang, I hope you enjoyed this episode and loved listening to the show as much as we enjoyed making it. Quick reminder that you can support us by going to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Okay, gotta prepare for next week's episode. Hope the rest of your day is full of wins.
Remember crying when Optimus Prime died?
Or the days when every series had a ham-fisted anti-drug episode?
Or when you wrote fan fiction about how the Animaniacs were so hot in that water tower so they took off all their clothes and they started...
No!
No, different podcast.
This one is Knowing is Half the Podcast, a show devoted to the best and worst animated memories of your childhood.
Every week we recap a cartoon from the past to see if they're as good as you remember.
They're not.
What are you talking about? They're great!
You're both wrong. None of them get good until they're in a water tower.
No!
And Knowing is Half the
Podcast.